I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. You can find either one of the live video shows on either Thursday at 7 p.m. or Sundays at 12:05. And now, on with the show.
I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live. Please pay attention to our warning graphic. It states that the Retro Rogues Live show is intended for an adult audience and not intended for children under the age of 13. Parental discretion is advised. I want to welcome you to episode 135 of the Retro Rogues Live. On tonight's show, we're going to be talking about Slave One controversy and trading cards. What's it like on the Star Trek disco set anyway? All this and your comments on tonight's episode of the Retro Rogues Live Collector's Corner. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Dave Beatty. For nearly the last 30 years, I've been a professional illustrator, graphic designer, worked on a lot of fun things that some people have heard of, such as Batman Incorporated, Justice League of America, and even Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes. But enough about that. I want to welcome back my co-host. This is Mr. Eric Alexander. Eric, please tell the folks, hopefully watching or listening at home, some of the fun things you have worked on as a creative professional.
Yes, hello, I'm Eric Alexander, also known as Bass God 14. That's Bass God 14, not Bass God. That's Bass God like a bass guitar. And I'm the chief financial officer of a small production company located in Arizona called Bad Bob Productions. Currently, I'm the executive producer on a film called Staycation, which has been filming out in California and is still filming, for the next couple of months.
All right, very cool. So you may see me leaning across like this because I've got a different microphone set up this evening. I'm trying out to see how I feel about that. If you don't mind, Eric, I want to go ahead and share my screen. And this is kind of a pop culture story, but I kind of want to start with it because it leads into actually the first pick actually for tonight's Collector's Corner. I'm going to bring this screen up here just real quick. Okay. All right. So this is coming from the Hollywood Reporter. It says Disney drops Slave One name on Lego's Boba Fett Star Wars ship. The name of the ship, which appeared in the films and on The Mandalorian, remains on the official Star Wars data bank. However, now this was from 2 days ago, and this was written by Ryan Parker. And as the story reads, we're not going to read the whole story. We want to encourage you to go to the Hollywood Reporter and read the whole story for yourself. That it says Disney is dropping the name Slave Run from Boba Fett's classic Star Wars ship, at least on a Lego product. The ship was first introduced on the big screen in The Empire Strikes Back and seen again in the prequel Attack of the Clones before appearing in Season 2 of The Mandalorian, and the name of the ship still appears in the Star Wars databank, the official reference guide for the franchise. On a new Lego set, the ship is now titled Boba Fett Starship. As first reported by the Star Wars fan site Jedi News, Jens Kronvold Dixon, apologies if I'm saying that wrong, not meaning to. Lego Star Wars.
Common pronunciation,
yeah.
Dave.
Yes, there you go. Lego Star Wars design director told the site that Disney asked the name to be changed for the latest model. Neither Disney nor Lego responded to a request for additional comment. The Lego Boba Fett Starship goes on sale August 1st. All right, so my goal with this, the reason I'm going to bring this up, is to not get into a lot of controversy, although obviously if those of you in the Rogues Gallery want to talk about the controversy, please feel free. We'd love to put your comments up and actually talk with you about it. It's one of the things we want to do. We want to encourage you to comment from wherever you are. We want to know what you think. It is important to us. Now, this made a lot of headway all over the place. I saw it like all over social media and everything, all kinds of people talking about it. I'm sure you heard about it too, right, Eric?
Oh yeah, it's been a huge topic of discussion on from the people that I follow on Twitter. It's been all over the place.
Okay, so that's going to lead us into, wait for it, don't wait for it. It's going to lead us into tonight's trading card picks, because those of you who may not know, we do a new show on Sunday at 12:05, and we actually reviewed the 2D, the micro series animated Clone Wars cartoons. It's on Disney Plus as a part of their vintage collection. If you want to go check that out, please go check out our episode. So we had to see about it, and then go check out the show actually on Disney Plus. I wanted to do something kind of Star Wars themed, and then this topic just kind of fell into my lap, like Boba Fett's starship falling right out of the sky. All right, so if you don't mind, Eric, would you mind putting up the first graphic?
Which one did you want to go with first? The first appearance?
Let's do the first appearance first. Okay, so this is our first trading card pick for this evening. It's not a super terribly valuable card. I do have some notes here on my formerly ink-stained fingers because I used to be an inker. All right, so this is, as far as I could tell based on my research, this is the first appearance of Boba Fett's starship. I want you to notice this is Empire Strikes Back Starcraft, not starship, but we're not going to split hairs here. But this is the first appearance, as far as I could tell, of Boba Fett's starship, a.k.a. Slave One. All right, so if you notice here, this is from 1980. This is the Topps Empire Strikes Back. This is card number 138. Now, what's interesting about this card is it's not too super expensive if you want to purchase it raw. It's, you know, also not too terribly expensive to actually purchase if you want to buy it graded. But the thing I thought would be interesting to point out is that some of these early trading cards that have Slave One on them, I don't know, maybe there might be something that might happen with this now that there's a controversy surrounding it. So I thought it might be worth pointing out, because if you want to have this card in your collection, if you've been thinking about picking up this card for your collection, you might want to move sooner or later, because I feel like this controversy might actually create a little bit more demand. What do you think about our first pick for tonight?
Well, I think you picked up on what the real controversy should be, right? Because the Lego product that's coming out, they're calling it Boba Fett's Starship, right? And you kind of touched on it. It's actually a Starcraft, folks. You didn't even get the controversy right. It's a Starcraft. That's what it originally was called. All right, you got it all wrong. Everybody's got this Slave One controversy going. No, originally it was called a Starcraft. Actually, yeah, that was totally impromptu, but I just, when I saw that and you kind of mentioned that, I just thought that's pretty funny when you think about it. That it's like, it is funny because things do evolve over time, right? In yeah, terms of the way that they're referred to. And this is a classic example of that, right? Originally, they were calling it a Starcraft, you know, instead of a starship. I wouldn't have known that if you hadn't brought this up, if you hadn't showed this particular card. And I'm wondering, I'm thinking, because I know my brother had a lot of these cards. Specifically, he had the Empire Strikes Back ones. He had like 200 of them. He had a big stack of them. And I'm trying to figure out what happened to them. I don't know where they are. I don't know if he has them somewhere. I feel like I kind of inherited them at some point, and I did something with them, and I don't know what I did with them. And I'm wondering if we have this specific card, because he did have quite a few of these Empire cards. I know he had at least a couple cards that did have Boba Fett, and I think had Slave One on it, but they were like, you know, actual pictures from the film, you know, as opposed to this, right, where it's a picture basically of the model that's, you know, being done specifically so we can just see the ship. It is interesting when you think about that, the fact that, you know, originally they didn't even refer to it as a starship. They referred to it as a Starcraft.
And, you know, there used to be those delineations, you know, Star Cruiser, Star Fighter, it's just one of those things, you know, that I don't know. It's just kind of an interesting thing to kind of point out.
But that's another thing that maybe possibly could make this card go up in value, where it really could become even more speculative because of that. You know, if other people kind of,
right,
maybe even in a tongue-in-cheek way like I was, if they pick up on that, they say, hey, you know, we can go on multiple angles with this one here, you know? Not only is it Slave One, it's a Starcraft, not a starship.
And along those lines, I did a little bit more research than I typically do, just because I was curious to see. So I actually went on to the PSA website to try and see what they said the general value was for it with the population count. The population count for this card graded is extremely low, extremely low. Now, that's probably just because there's never really been a lot of demand for it before.
Right.
I mean, you know, there's demand for Boba Fett's, you know, quote unquote, first appearance slash rookie card, you know, but maybe there's not so much necessarily, you know, for Boba Fett's Starcraft. But now with the controversy with the naming and everything, I feel like maybe there might be. So I went on the PSA, was poking around trying to see. And according to PSA, they're saying the value graded, this is graded between an 8 and basically a 10. They're saying somewhere between a range of $8 to $27 graded, which you would think with the grading fees, like that seems awfully low, but that's what the PSA website said. I might have been reading that wrong. I don't spend a lot of time on the PSA website, but I was curious because I know the Star Wars cards tend to be more valuable. So I was curious about this. What do you think about that, Eric? I mean, $8 to $27 for a graded version.
I can't say that I'm super surprised, because I don't feel like this is necessarily a card that would be coveted by a lot of people, because I don't think that this was like a, it wasn't really a thing, right? I mean, Boba Fett's right. ship is cool, right? I mean, I think people generally, fans think that, but again, it's the ship is in large part is so cool because people think Boba Fett is cool, right? And so
right.
anything associated with Boba Fett, you know, becomes cool. So it doesn't surprise me a whole lot, because even though the ships in a lot of ways are their own characters, people specifically talk about the Millennium Falcon almost being to the point that it's a character, you know, in Star Wars. It's so iconic, it's so important. I don't think Slave One necessarily has that. I think like an X-Wing does, a TIE fighter does, you know, but I don't think, at least up to this point, Slave One necessarily had that. I think it was just something that was cool because it was Boba Fett's ship. But I think now a lot of people are going to take a harder look at that because of the recent controversy. I think a lot more people now are going to be looking at anything Slave One, you know, be it a card, you know, be it a playset, be it, you know, whatever, you know, that people are going to scrutinize it a lot more than they used to.
Yeah. And I think so too, which is why I wanted to bring them up now. Based on what I could see, primarily just looking at eBay, you know, raw value with this card, basically anywhere from $5 to $10. And there are some current, like, buy it now options where you could actually purchase essentially Boba Fett's rookie card and the Slave One rookie card as a set together for $25, you know, and kind of up. So if you're curious to pick this one up, if you want to find a way to kind of hold on something neat that's you know, Boba Fett StarCraft Slave One, then that's how you could do that. You know, maybe.
And remember, you heard it first here on the Retro Rogues Live. The real controversy has nothing to do with Slave One, StarCraft versus Starship. We uncovered the actual real origin of the name, and you heard it here first. And Jane is in the house, so we want to acknowledge Jane. It's good to see you.
Hi, Mom. Now, along these lines, I think we're probably good to go ahead and move on to the next one, unless you have anything else you might want to add.
No, I just, like I said, I wonder if my brother has this card or if I do somewhere. I've got to try to find those Empire Strike Back cards. I really do.
I mean,
see what I got in there.
I have a copy of this card, but it's in horrible condition because my Star Wars cards are in really bad shape because I had them since I was like a little guy. But mine's pretty torn up. I was thinking about trying to purchase one, but it's probably going to be a little while before I could get one. Now that we're talking about it like this, I have this weird feeling it's going to cost me more than I wanted to, but you know, still this is for your benefit, dear valued viewer, dear valued listener. You know, if you like Boba Fett and if you're interested to, you know, get in on this interesting, weird little thing right here with this controversy and everything. Right now, you can pick this card up pretty cheap if you move quick. So,
as Lynn says, Boba Fett, Boba Fett, where? Yes, I remember that line.
Hi, Lynn.
Absolutely, yeah. Remember that line.
Yeah, very cool. All right, so let's go ahead and go to our next pick. This is going to be what I'm going to dub as a key appearance. And then this is from 1995 Topps Empire Strikes Back. This is the Wide Vision promo cards. I had to shrink this down a lot to get this to fit on the screen. You see, it's already partially covering my head as it is. But anyhow, we're going to call this a key appearance. This is a very, very early card. I didn't realize there wasn't that many. I mean, there's a lot of Slave One, Boba Fett, StarCraft cards out there. Okay, everybody. There's a lot of them out there. Primarily, we're going to focus on early ones, and then I have a pick. But I thought this one was really kind of cool. It's the Wide Vision. So those cards tend to be like, you know, again, Wide Vision. They're longer than a typical trading card. But this is the promo card. This is a really early one. It's a great shot. You know, Cloud City, they're loading Han Solo into the – put Captain Solo into the cargo hold or whatever. So there you go. I thought this was a fun card. What do you think about it, Eric?
It's a great looking card. There's no doubt about that. I mean, it's a really good looking card. I'm not familiar with these particular, you know, these particular style of cards, these wide vision cards. It's not something I ever got into back in the day, but it is a very good looking card. You know, obviously that's the image straight out of the film. So it's a great looking card, but I will say this, the fact that it doesn't actually say Slave One on it, that might actually have somewhat of an effect, at least from a speculator's point of view, as far as the value of the card. I'm curious, Dave, what is the value? What kind of values did you come up with on this card?
Well, it's a promo card, so it's a little bit more rare. So you're looking anywhere from $4 to $10. It can sometimes cost you a little bit less if you buy it in a set of promo cards. But like I said, this is just a really, really early, card actually for Boba Fett's StarCraft. There's just not that many of them, at least early on. And then after a certain point, there's a floodgate of them. But this is interesting. Lynn actually has a comment that's actually highly, highly worth bringing up.
Yeah, it says, the Topps Empire Wide Vision set was the first sketch card gig I had. I drew a lot of Boba and Vader. That's very cool, Lynn. That's very cool. I would love to actually see some of your cards at some point. That would be actually a lot of fun. Maybe we could feature them on a future edition of the Collector's Corner and talk about some of those specific cards.
And Len is an incredibly talented artist and cartoonist. And I think it's still lenworkman.com, right, Len? If you would type that in, we'll put that up here on the show and tell people to go check out Len's website where you can see examples of his incredible sketch card and sketch cover artwork. Just incredible, incredible stuff. And it's funny, Len, I had forgotten that you had actually worked on the Wide Vision series. It's weird because when you go and you research these cards, this is just a really, really early one of Boba Fett StarCraft. There's just not that many of them. And I just thought it was a really, really awesome card. There you go, everybody. www.lenworkman.com. That's LINWORKMAN.com.
Check it out. He does some awesome work. We actually have some of Len's work hanging in the house. Years ago, my brother bought a Captain Marvel that Len actually put in the Phoenix Comic Con auction. And that hangs up in his room to this day, Len. So we have your artwork hanging in this household.
Very cool. And I actually have a painting of Sherlock Holmes's Data hanging right over there in my studio. So
very cool.
All right. So let's go ahead and go to the, I think we're kind of done with this one. Let's go ahead and go to the next one, kind of keep it moving here. So this will be the last one for this evening. This is my pick. This is my personal pick. As is always, I like to pick the painted cards. I love the painted cards. That's kind of the thing that I think is the most awesome is when you see really great, really incredible artwork on a card. And I picked this one specifically because it's an early, early appearance for Slave One, still relatively early, but it's just a beautifully painted illustrated card. So this is from 1996. This is the top Shadows of the Empire card, number 17, Slave One. Now this is by the, I think it's both of the Hildebrandt brothers. I was just looking at it like a day or two ago when I put the graphic together, and now I can't remember if it's one of the two brothers or it's both of the brothers working together, but this is the Hildebrandt brothers. That Rogue card from our episode where you focused on Rogue, that was also the Hildebrandt brothers. These guys are incredible. So here's just a beautiful, awesome image of Slave One. What do you think about this card, Eric?
I think it's really interesting that it's from Shadows of the Empire. That's really interesting to me because, you know, to go back in time a little bit, I think a lot of people, especially younger people, this entire concept, they might be like, what the heck is that? So Shadows of the Empire was really interesting because it was the concept that Lucasfilm had was we're going to do everything except the movie. You know what I mean? We're going to do everything except the movie. So they had toys, they had comic books, they had books, they had a soundtrack, they had all sorts of stuff, games. You know, the Nintendo 64 game is actually the part of that entire experience that was probably closest to me because I remember, first of all, anticipating the Nintendo 64. And then that was like one of the games that was advertised as one of the release games, although I don't think it actually came out when the Nintendo 64 was released. It's on the box art, but it actually came out like a couple months later. So it was very like a highly anticipated game. There were only like five games that came out initially with the Nintendo 64, right? So, and this was like one of the first games that came out. And I remember beating that game and how challenging it was. And also, yeah, this fact that yeah, Boba Fett is in it. Boba Fett is kind of important in that story of Shadows of the Empire. So that's actually the thing that strikes me right off the bat is that that this is actually not related to Empire. It's not related to the prequels, right? This is not, you know, back when Jango Fett had Slave One, right? This is actually from Shadows of the Empire, which I think is really cool because Shadows of the Empire is kind of one of those crazy footnotes in Star Wars lore and Star Wars history in a lot of ways because it wasn't really exactly like expanded universe. It actually went beyond what your typical like expanded universe stuff was, which was typically a book or maybe a comic, maybe a book and a comic, maybe a toy, like a toy. But for the most part, you know, it wasn't the way that they did this. This was really, really a crazy experiment that Lucasfilm did where they basically tried to do everything except the actual movie.
Yeah, and it was kind of a really a fun, neat time too, you know, with a lot of experimentation, which is one of the things that's neat about this card, because it's almost like you would see those Ralph McQuarrie concept art cards, which is one of the things I kind of like about it. It's got that kind of feel and that kind of vibe. But this is a really cool card, and this is another one, not terribly expensive to pick up. So, if I remember correctly, it does say Slave One on the back of this card. I think it does. What do you think about?
But does it say StarCraft? Does it say StarCraft? That's what I want to know.
You might have me there because I'm not sure if it actually says StarCraft or not.
Because if it doesn't say StarCraft, then it's not what you want, folks. You want the one that says StarCraft on it.
Well, I think you want the one that says StarCraft on it anyway, because technically that's the rookie card, right? That's the rookie card for Boba Fett's StarCraft. All right, so what do you think the value of this one is? I mean, Shadows of the Empire is obviously a niche thing. What do you think?
It's so hard for me to say, you know. You look at a card like that, and you know, the artwork is so good. But let's face it, a lot of collectors, that's not why they get these things. You know, they're motivated by other factors. So it'd be very difficult for me to guess, you know, like I'm going to say like, you know, ungraded, like $5, something like that.
No, more like $2 and up.
Really?
$2 and up. That's it. That is it, everybody. $2 and up. No, yeah, it's just a really neat card. I mean, I can understand part of it because, you know, part of the deal is with it is it's not associated with a major Star Wars movie, you know, so I kind of get part of it. But on the flip of that, too, you would think it would be at least a little bit more valued because it's an early, early Slave One card. But then again, like I said, I think until this controversy, I think a lot of people are kind of taking Slave One kind of a little bit, you know, for granted. So, absolutely. You know, maybe that might change people's appreciation for it. Because in my mind, it's one of the most iconic of all the Star Wars ships, especially after its appearance in The Mandalorian. It is so awesome in The Mandalorian. I mean, it's just, it's, you know, stock in my mind anyway, has only gone up. And then we got the Book of Boba Fett coming up. So we're going to see more, hopefully, of Boba Fett's StarCraft, you know, moving forward. I don't know. I mean, it's not confirmed that they're not going to use the Slave One moniker anymore, but it looks like possibly they may not. So,
yeah, it's really interesting the entire controversy, which is something that I had wanted to talk about specifically on the show, because a lot of people, of course, are going sort of your typical. They're having your typical outrage perspective. I think, you know, a lot of people, you know, they'll bring up sort of like SJW type things and stuff of that nature. And I have a different take on this. I really feel like one of the problems and one of the reasons that they did this, and remember, as of right now, there's been like no official comment that I'm aware of from either Disney or Lucasfilm about the status of the name. Like even Lego hasn't really said anything other than, well, this is what they asked us to do. you know, and they haven't said anything more than that about the future of the name or anything like that. I think part of the issue is pretty simple, is once you start to make Boba Fett into a sort of a heroic character, anti-hero, however you want to call him, it does become a little bit problematic, you know, what you associate with him. Okay. So, and specifically when you're marketing things to children, right? That can become problematic, you know, and we know that he's a bad guy, and there's no denying he's a bad guy, which is what he was in the original trilogy. Okay. For any of you that want to think otherwise, it's just not true. This is the man that Darth Vader had to say, take a chill pill, you know, no disintegrations. Okay. Because Vader was basically telling this guy, you're too cutthroat for this particular, you know, mission. And I need to put you in your place a little bit, because otherwise you're just going to kill everybody. Right. That's the implication of that, that Vader is trying to keep this guy in line because Vader thinks he's kind of crazy. Think about that simple line like that. That's exactly what he was conveying. Darth Vader is telling this guy, take it easy, because I know your reputation. I know your reputation. I know the way you operate. I've worked with you before. That's all in that. That's all in that, that little no disintegrations, you know, as you wish, you know. So, and Boba Fett's disappointment, right? As you wish, because that's not the way he likes to operate. He doesn't like to bring in people alive. You know what I mean? Although he does say right. about Han, right? He's no use to me dead, right? But, right. You know, he is not somebody that was supposed to be a heroic character. He's one of those characters that became sort of a breakout character that people started to really like, really enjoy. And because of that, in large part because of that, the Mandalorian decided to make him a heroic character. You know, we even said, you know, during our initial reviews of the episodes, as we were kind of cautioning people a little bit, because we were a little bit afraid of the fact of, are they going to make Boba Fett too heroic? Is he no longer going to be a villain? And in a lot of ways, I feel that's what happened. He's kind of not a villain, you know, anymore. It's like there were things in The Mandalorian that to me did not make sense about what Boba Fett was doing. Okay. Boba Fett worked for the Empire all the time, and Boba Fett hates Jedi. He absolutely hates Jedi. He has literally fought Luke twice. Okay. You know, in one of those fights, he ended up in the Sarlacc pit. Okay. So this is a person that should absolutely despise Luke. Okay. He hates all Jedi. It's established in the prequels. You know, I'm sorry if you haven't watched the prequels, but spoiler alert, his dad was killed by a Jedi. Okay. And he had to find his way in the universe, you know, all alone after that. I think it's established in the Clone Wars also that he was very much opposed to the Jedi because of the fact that they killed his father and all that kind of stuff. That I know there's some episodes of the Clone Wars that deal with a young Boba Fett. But what they did in The Mandalorian was they did make him, in a lot of ways, a heroic character. He did help them out. He didn't betray them. That was one thing that I didn't like. You know, that's one criticism I have of The Mandalorian, is that Boba Fett did not ultimately betray them, which I think is what he should have done, because that's what Boba Fett is. He's a bad guy. He's a bad guy. So what I'm trying to say is I do think it becomes a little bit problematic when you take that away, because that was always the intention, was this was a bad guy. It's a bounty hunter. You know, even the Imperial officers, remember, were saying, we don't need these, you know, we don't need their kind, right? You know, even the Imperial officers don't like these guys, all right? Even the Imperial officers think that these guys are like scum. They're brutal. They don't want them around, right? That's what these guys are supposed to be. And when you start to make the characters like all noble and, you know, he has his code and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, you can take it too far. You can take it too far. And I think part of this controversy and part of what has happened at Disney is they've painted themselves into a little bit of a corner where now Boba Fett is more of a sort of heroic or at least an anti-hero type of character. He's getting his own show, right? And I think that that has put them in sort of a weird position where now, in today's day and age, the way things are, they're questioning some of this stuff. They're questioning some of these associations, right? Is it problematic that his ship is called Slave One? I don't know. I just feel like in a lot of ways, these kinds of decisions do have consequences down the line, because I know a lot of fans were really happy to see Boba Fett, and a lot of fans were really happy to see what happened with Boba Fett in The Mandalorian. When you start to change the fundamentals of the character, there can be unintended consequences. And that's kind of my take on the whole controversy of the whole of why Lego was even doing this or was asked to do this in the first place to remove the name.
Definitely. And Lynn actually sent over an image of some of his actual artist returns for the Wide Vision set. Unfortunately, Lynn, they look awful small on my screen. I was trying to get them to actually open up a little bit larger, but it's wait a minute. Here we go. This is a little bit better. Now, still kind of hard to see.
Let's try to put it on full screen there.
Yeah. The image is still a little small, unfortunately, but like I said, if you go to lynnworkman.com, you can see them, but these are absolutely incredible because these are all drawn by hand by Lynn. And then right here, here's a shot of Slave One right there.
Yeah, I love that. I like them all, actually. I really like the one of Luke, you know, of Luke's face in the Darth Vader helmet. That's really cool. Of course, Yoda. I love Yoda and everything like that. But these are really great images. I hope they're coming out at least somewhat okay for folks if you're able to actually being able to watch this as opposed to doing the podcast where you're just listening to us. But there is an image of Darth Vader, in his sort of like I don't know, what would you call that? Like sort of like, I think that we kind of thought of that maybe like his regeneration module at the time in Empire Strikes Back, that little pod that he was in.
Yeah, that's kind of how, that's what I always thought it was too. I mean, I think they actually did have a technical name for it.
And then we've got the image that I was mentioning of Luke in the Darth Vader helmet from basically when he had to fight himself. We've got the image of Slave One, very much the classic image as when it was being loaded up on Cloud City. We've got Han Solo and Carbonite. We've got Yoda, you know, basically in his home in Dagobah. And then, of course, R2 Dagobah.
Hold on. I got something better here. Let me let me pull this over. And this is actually this is Lynn's website, lynnworkman.com. But check out all this killer artwork, everybody. These are all hand-drawn cards, and they're trading card size too. That's a lot of people. I think that's a lot of things. I think sometimes people don't understand about sketch card gigs. I mean, you're drawing on the actual trading card, and those trading cards are tiny. But look at how incredible this stuff is. We got some cartoony style. We got some, you know, super realistic looking stuff. I mean, this stuff is incredible.
Yeah, that image of Chewbacca. If you go back down there, that image of Chewbacca. You able to get it back, or did you go to a different page
there? Yeah, I went to a different page. Hold on, I'll go back. Hold on, we're gonna go back in time. This one right here?
Yeah, that one. That's just amazing. That's absolutely
Isn't that incredible.
Amazing. That's absolutely amazing.
Incredible stuff. Let's see if we can skip ahead here. All this stuff is on Lynn's website. Oh, here we go. This is one of my favorite cards right here.
Yeah, that was the image that I was actually talking about. The one of Luke in the Vader helmet. Yeah, Luke's head in the Vader helmet, I should say.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome.
He's already
stuff.
Locked it off. I do like that sort of cartoony image of Yoda next to it too. That's that makes me laugh.
Here we go. This is cool. I like this one. Really cool shot of Boba Fett. Here's that moment you were talking about. That's really cool that Lynn actually has it on here. No disintegrations. Yeah, very cool. All right. Well, yeah, everybody definitely go check that out. Again, Lynn is a sketch card artist who's worked for Topps, which has been publishing the Star Wars trading cards for a very, very long time. And his work is absolutely incredible. But there you go. Very cool stuff, everybody. All right, cool. Yeah. All right. So let's go ahead and move on to our next topic. But I want to encourage everyone to see right here at lynnworkman.com. Go check it out over there. You can see all the amazing stuff that Lynn's got posted up. He's worked on a lot of different trading card sets. He's got actually some stuff for sale on his website. Lots of cool stuff. Go check it out over there. All right.
And then
cool.
He had a little comment here. He says, I remember first seeing Boba Fett in the Empire trailer. The Fred Superstore here in Memphis had an in-store Darth Vader appearance and were playing the trailer over and over on a loop. They gave out a Vader with two troopers, Boba Fett shooting fire, and a Yoda on Dagobah. That's pretty cool. Wow.
Yeah, very cool. Very
That's
cool.
Very
sure.
cool. Wow, that is really neat. That would I imagine that must have been a lot of fun. I never remember going to promotion like that growing up, so that's pretty awesome.
And then I was going to just real quickly, how are we doing on time here, Eric? Are we running a little long? Are we okay
for one? Oh, more we're good. We're good on time.
All right. Okay. I want to put, if I can find it again quickly, I want to put this back up. I'm loading it back in. I'm not going to give this a lot of context, but on a previous episode, we talked about this particular trading card. This is Loki's first appearance from 1976. This is the top sticker. Doesn't have a number, but this, as far as I could tell, is Loki's first appearance on a Topps sticker. All I'm going to say is if you're watching the Loki show, if you're interested to go pick one of these up, I'd probably do it sooner than later. So that's just a recommendation. It may not spike in value at all. Let's just be perfectly clear. Okay. But if you like this card, if you're a Loki fan, if you want to have it in your collection, I would probably go try and run one down sooner than later, or wait till after the show finishes its run and maybe try to pick one up, you know, after things maybe calm down a little bit. But I'm just going to throw this out there that if you're interested in picking one of these up, I'd probably do it sooner than later. Just going to say.
Have you seen a trend recently as far as some prices out there on this card?
I can't really say exactly why I'm telling people to go keep an eye out for it, but it's not a trend per se, but there is something that has happened that we'd have to put a spoiler alert for me to get further into it. So,
but all right, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Very, so, very mysterious recommendation from Dave.
Yeah. If you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. I'm just telling you, you might want to go get one sooner than later. That's all I'm going to say. So if now, like I said, because of what happened, it might have actually gone up. It might have spiked and may not even be worth picking. It may be overpriced right now, but if it's still in a relatively decent range and if you want to have it, I'd probably start looking at trying to pick one up that you can get relatively inexpensively. I mean, like I said, with what's happened, it may spike up a little bit in value, or it may stay where it is. I don't know. But I'm just saying that due to recent events, if you want to get one, I say you should start looking sooner than later. So
now's the time, huh?
Well, remember we've been talking about that Marvel bump?
Exactly. Yeah. That Marvel bump.
I can't go any further into it without getting into spoilers. But off the air, if you want to know, Eric, I was shocked at what happened. I'll tell you about it, because I know you probably missed it, but it was, I was pretty
yeah
shocked,
I am not so. Supporting the Loki show in any way, shape, or form,
right? Yeah.
So I basically have boycotted it, so
yeah, right.
that's just me. Hey, and if you're enjoying it, that's great. Hey, that's great. I have no problem with you enjoying what you like, you know, but I also will choose what I decide, you know, to spend my free time on, and it's not going to be Loki. It's just not going there.
Right.
Of course,
right.
Lynn probably talks about something that a lot of people did. He says, "Man, I stuck those stickers on everything, including my How to Draw Comics, the Marvel Way book." I have that book as well, Lynn, by the way. But mine's pristine. Mine's clean. I didn't put anything on it. What else I have, which is kind of funny, is I have the CD-ROM version of that, which I thought was interesting because there was a time period, and you probably remember this. And Dave, you probably remember this. There was a short time period where they were trying to make like these interactive books and putting them on CD-ROM.
Right.
And they did a version of that for How to Draw the Marvel Way. And I have it somewhere. I've always wondered if those things were worth anything. Probably not, because it was like a failed idea. It never went anywhere. You know, people either want a book or they want a video game. You know what I mean? They don't want some crappy amalgamation of the two, you know? So, but yeah, I have the CD-ROM version of it somewhere as well. I always liked it because, you know, back then, you know, everything came in those big boxes, like PC games and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So it's really kind of cool. I don't know if I still have the box, though. I'll have to check.
All right, there you go. Oh, and one more thing here, just real quick, actually, before we take off. I did find right there, is Lynn's Slave One sketch card that he did for Tops, which I think is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I love it. Show that's great. Right
there. Isn't that awesome?
That's great. Yeah, I love it. Very cool. That's very cool.
All right, very cool. All right. So that's all the trading card stuff I have for tonight. So again, if you're interested, if you like for that Boba Fett's, you know, StarCraft is named, you know, Slave One, I definitely got to try to track down a copy of that Empire Strikes Back card. I would do it, you know, sooner than later. Again, like I said, PSA is saying graded $8 to $27, give or take. And then, you know, raw, you're looking at $5 to $10. You can pick it up in a set with Boba Fett's technical rookie card from the same Empire Strikes Back set. I saw quite a few of them on eBay, roughly about $25. So if you're interested to check that stuff out and get those, I would get on it sooner than later, because I feel like, you know, people might be thinking more about this moving forward. So now would probably be a good time.
It'll be interesting to see when Disney finally gets around to saying something official, whether it's right. One way or another, whether they say this was a one-time deal. Or whether they say, no, we are retiring the name, you know? So it'll be really interesting to see it. Cause in a way you almost feel like Disney is helping speculators, because it's like, they're not giving you a definitive answer right now. Right, so this right. may be the time to anything you have with Slave One on it. Just sell it right now. The next thing you know is Disney's going to come out and say, no, it's just a one-time deal. We're still keeping the name, you know, that kind of a thing. So you never know, and, right? Until they make that commitment, you don't know.
And that is something to keep in mind. I mean, on the flip of this too, just like I'm saying, if you want to pick one up, I'm thinking you might want to move sooner than later. On the flip side, you know, now also might be a good time actually to get rid of it. Like if you have a couple of these trading cards and you don't care about them, you're not attached to them. Right. Amidst the controversy, now might be a good time to look at listing those cards in order to sell them. I honestly do think there'll be more people looking for them right now than there probably were before. I know I was on eBay looking for them. Part of it's curiosity. And secondly, I am thinking about trying to upgrade the quality of the one that I have in my own personal collection. So, you know, definitely if you want to get rid of some of these cards, now might be a good time. You know, put them all together in a whole bunch of Slave One cards. It's a controversial Slave One, you know, Star Wars cards, you know, and just stick them up on eBay or Mercari or something and see what happens. Why not? So,
yeah, but there is an interesting element to this, because like, unlike, for instance, like the Gina Carano Cara Dune situation, where we know they're not going to be making any more of that stuff, where that stuff is gone. Okay. Certainly anything with Gina Carano's likeness, that's gone. That's a premium collectible now. They will make no more of that stuff. We don't know that if that's the situation with Slave One. That is another funny part of the controversy, is there's no official word from Disney saying, what are we really doing here? You know, is this just, again, a one-time deal, or are we retiring the name?
Right, right. And I'll be curious to see exactly what happens with that, for sure. So, because we do have Book of Boba Fett coming up, and I am assuming we're going to see more of Slave One. So we'll see, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right,
it'll see how what they do with the character, you know, ultimately. Very as cool. well. So.
All right, and then Eric, do you have anything for the Collector's Corner portion of tonight's show?
No, I actually wanted to talk about Slave One as well. So it's kind of funny. So again, Dave and I usually kind of at the last minute will like, say what do we want to talk about on the show. We generally try to come up with our own stories and things like that independently. And that's what I wanted to talk about. You know, I wanted to talk about the Slave One controversy. So right on.
All right. Well, there you go. There you go. Okay. All right. Well, that's all I have for Collector's Corner for this week. Should we go ahead and segue over into some pop culture news?
Yeah, that sounds good. We can do a little pop culture news.
Okay. All right. So we're just going to, well, I don't think I really need to set it up anymore. We're just going to be talking about pop culture news. Hopefully it's something that you will find worthy of discussion. That's what we like to talk about here in the pop culture news segment. So I don't have anything for pop culture news. That was kind of my Slave One thing. It tied directly into my picks. So I kind of led off with it. So that kind of was my pop culture news for this week. What do you have, Eric?
So I actually wanted to talk about something that's been getting quite a lot of attention on a lot of other sites. And I wanted to definitely give a shout out because the source of this information comes from a friend of ours. He's a friend of the show, and you know, I consider him an actual personal friend, really great guy. And we're talking about PJ from Orville Nation. And very recently, he had an appearance by an actor named Andrew Moody. Okay. And if you haven't heard about this, you need to, because this is a really interesting story. If you are into Star Trek at all, and whether you like Discovery or not, I'm going to tell you, this is kind of a bombshell. For some people, it's confirmed what we thought all along. And for some of you, you might be a little bit shocked. So this is actually Bounty and Comics did an article about this. But again, the source of this information is from Orville Nation. This is where the appearance was. And the title of the article reads, Dark Matter actor Andrew Moody claims the Star Trek Discovery production team is terrorizing the cast and crew. Yes, he used the word terrorizing. So let's give a little bit of context. So Dark Matter and Orphan Black actor Andrew Moody recently claimed that the Star Trek Discovery production team is terrorizing the cast and crew. The actor appeared on the Dark Matter Monday show hosted every week on the Orville Nation YouTube channel. By the way, I am going to give a link directly for Orville Nation episode. I'll do that at the end of the story here. So basically, Moody played Jacob in Star Trek Discovery, and he has said, quote, as opposed to being on the set of Star Trek, which I was on the set of Star Trek, worst experience. Sorry, I'll be very careful about what I say. So the context was, because I've watched the video, the context was that Moody was talking about his experience on Dark Matter, which was very positive, as opposed to his experience basically working Star Trek Discovery. Moody went on to say, the thing I will say about working on Star Trek is I got to work with Jonathan Frakes, and he is a gentleman. He is brilliant. He is a great director. Beautiful human being. So supportive. That's that. Grateful, wonderful people. But I could tell, I will say, is the crew and cast were traumatized by a production team in a writer's room that was in constant flux and power dynamics where you could just tell that they felt threatened. You could tell they felt threatened, he added. He then goes on to say, and eventually the producers of Star Trek threatened me. And I was just like, I don't care. Came after me. Yeah, the showrunner was hired, and there was a new showrunner, and I was brought into ADR. For those of you that don't know what ADR is, basically the actor comes back in to re-record certain lines they didn't get when they recorded live. That's what ADR is, okay? So that's a post-production thing. That's basically after he's already filmed his scene, they bring him back in to basically do voiceovers of himself so that, you know, the audio is all clear because maybe they lost something when they did it live. He says, I was brought in to do ADR, and they want me to redo my entire performance because the new showrunner didn't like my acting. Ultimately didn't like my acting. And I'm like, okay, well, that's fine. Art is subjective. Fundamentally, it's subjective, so there's nothing you can do. I like the Rolling Stones. You may hate the Rolling Stones. It's fine. They are the Rolling Stones. What are you going to do? He continued, but you tell something happened. So the new people at the head of Star Trek, whoever is running it now, they are just terrified of whoever is running it now. Whoever is running Star Trek now is running it with an iron fist, and they didn't like anything that I did, so they completely replaced my voice. I don't know who is voicing my character. So if you want to get the full skinny as far as this piece says, comments, first of all, that article I think does a pretty good job of summing it up, but I am putting the link in the chat here if you want to go directly to Orville Nation, to their YouTube site. You can see the entire interview, which, by the way, this is part of like a 2-hour long show. I just want to point that out. Like, his comments are maybe for like 5 minutes, something like that. And it was kind of like an aside where he was trying to express the fact that his experience on the Dark Matter set was really good. And his set, you know, basically on Star Trek Discovery, you know, that his experience there was not so good, even though there were good elements, right? Like, he says the cast and crew are great, but what he's talking about is the people at the top. The showrunners, the people's in the writer's room, the producers, that kind of stuff, right? The producers actually have any real clout, I should add, too, because I was just looking, I was just trying to do a little bit of research on this piece, and I was looking at all the producers they have for Star Trek Discovery. It's ridiculous. There's like 20 names on that thing, you know, going on IMDb. There have been so many people associated with this. And I did actually, I went to Wikipedia just so I could get a little bit of context myself, because I am not a big Discovery fan. And here's a little history, just a little breakdown. The original showrunner in pre-production for Star Trek Discovery was Brian Fuller. And Brian Fuller is someone that a lot of people a lot of Trekkies might remember that name, because he was involved with Deep Space Nine and he was involved with Voyager. He was basically fired before they even did one episode, okay? Fired, decided to leave, that kind of thing. Who knows exactly what happened? But basically, he ended up leaving before they even shot the first episode. So then another pair of folks came in, Gretchen J. Berg and Aaron Harberts, okay? Harberts, H-A-R-B-E-R-T-S. They took over, and basically, they were the showrunners throughout season one, okay, when they were actually shooting, and they set up season two. At some point, as season two went into production, Alex Kurtzman and Michelle Paradise, P-A-R-A-D-I-S-E, Paradise, they took over, and they've been in charge ever since. Now, Moody basically refused to name names, but it's funny because one of the hosts of the show, her name's Nina, she does a little cough, little Alex Kurtzman, you know, Alex Kurtzman, and he does not correct her. Okay, so I'm just putting that out there. Okay, for a lot of you people that maybe really, you know, enjoy Star Trek Discovery, this is shocking. But for people like me that have basically refused to support Star Trek Discovery, this is a huge confirmation of what we knew all along. So Dave, I'm curious, since I know that you do actually like a lot of Discovery, I'm curious how you react to this story.
Well, I guess the long and the short of it is, I liked season two quite a bit, just to clarify. I thought season one was fun, but season two was far superior to season one, in my opinion. And then I completely missed season three because at that time, called CBS All Access, decided to cancel my account. When they canceled my account, I went, oh, okay, I guess you don't want me to watch this show anymore. And I'll be honest with you, Eric, I haven't given it a second thought since they canceled my account. So,
did you see the episode that Moody was on? Because it was an episode two. Episode. It was called New Eden. Do you recall that episode?
Yeah, I saw that episode.
Do you recall Moody's performance? His picture's over here on the screen. Do you recall his performance as standing out one way or another, being bad or good or anything like
that? No, I don't remember it standing out as bad. I don't remember. To be honest with you, I don't really much remember much about that episode anyway. I only watched that episode once. It wasn't like it wasn't an episode I felt. It wasn't like was it Sound of Thunder or one of the episodes I told you to watch. It actually was about Saru. You know, there was some really good episodes in season two, but I don't really remember. I remember much about that episode.
Apparently, it was supposed to be about some survivors from World War III that had colonized some planet or something like
right. that. Right. I remember that because they were led there by the, well, I guess you put up the spoiler alert thing, but I remember that because they were led there by the Red Angel or whatever it was. But I mean, I remember the generics about what how it set up.
I'm just focused on his performance because obviously what he's also trying to give context to, as he said, ultimately they just were not, the new showrunner was not apparently not pleased with his performance, right? He put all out there. So I'm just curious, having watched the episode, if you had any insight into whether you thought, you know, he was good, bad, and different, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say I don't remember him being bad, but I don't remember that episode being bad. I don't remember anyone in the episode being particularly bad either. Like, I would not say, like, oh, man, the acting that episode was awful. You know, like, it wasn't.
Which so I would say that about the episode I watched, because I watched the first episode of season two, and I thought a lot of the acting did suck. And I'll just say it right straight to anybody's face. I did think a lot of the acting was terrible, and that's why I didn't watch any more of season two.
Right. All I'm saying is that I don't remember him specifically, but I wouldn't say that his performance was necessarily bad. He didn't stand out in a negative light at all. So that's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I'm curious since you actually saw the episode and I haven't, you know, so I am walking blind a little bit in that regard because there could have been issues with his performance. I don't know. You know, but that's not ultimately what he's also talking about. And I like the fact that he does mention that art is subjective and maybe some people didn't like his performance. You know, he can acknowledge that he's not always perfect, right? Even though he's an actor and that's his profession. And I looked at his IMDb. He's done a lot of work, like since 1987 up till now, he's been working. And so, you know, I did check that out. And even though I'm not very familiar with him, I can see that he's had a very long career. But what he's also talking about is regardless of even whether he was good or bad, it's just the way that he felt that he was treated and the atmosphere he felt working on the set and how he could feel that dynamic, that tension that exists because everybody basically on the ground floor is working their ass off and trying to do the best they can, right? And I think very oftentimes people forget that, like people that may hate this show, they sometimes forget that, you know, actors are they're doing a job, right? And they're doing a job and they're trying to get a paycheck. There are people like grips, people working on the set design, all that kind of stuff. They're working their asses off and they're trying their best to put out a good product, right? And lots of times there are people on the top who don't make that job easy, right? Because they got egos, because they're jerks. You know what I mean? Because they're not good people. You know what I mean? That kind of stuff. That happens. That does happen, you know? And you need to consider that. You know, there's a larger debate here where I hear people a lot of times saying, well, I can separate the art from the artist, right? And I don't know. Sometimes I'm kind of like, you know, if you're giving money to these people and if this is a really bad person, right? And they're doing bad things and treating people badly. Do you really want to support that, even if you think it's a good show? I'm putting that out as an open question because I think people need to think about that. And if the people that are running this thing, and ultimately the people that are profiting from the ones profiting from it the most, right? If they're doing some bad things and some bad business practices, do you really want to support that? It's an open-ended question, you know.
Interesting. All right. Like I said, I don't have anything else for pop culture. Did anyone in the Rogues Gallery have any comments or?
I haven't heard that the Rogues Gallery has fallen quiet.
There is a slightly relevant comment Lynn made earlier. Slave to controversy.
There we go. And that actually fits into what I was just talking about as well.
So. I thought that was kind of weirdly appropriate. Like it kind of works. All right, cool. Well, I don't have anything for pop culture. Do you have anything else for pop culture this week?
No. Did you have anything for Streaming Wars?
I don't have anything for Streaming Wars. My trading card research and everything else took up kind of pretty much the time I had, unfortunately. Do you have anything for Streaming Wars this week?
No, no, I don't. But I have another one that for pop culture, since we're basically right at the hour mark. And so I thought I would just throw this out here because I also wanted to talk about this in another about next week's show. So I'm going to throw this out there live on the air and have this discussion with you. I don't know if you heard about this. This is a Vanity Fair article. And I'll just refer people to the article. It says there's a new alien TV series, and it will be Class Warfare with Xenomorphs. The showrunner, Noah Hawley, explains what you need to know about his upcoming FX show and his latest novel, Anthem. Okay. I'm not going to get into the article any more than that. That is their interpretation of what he said. That basically is what he said. To put into some context, basically what he's saying is his alien show, he's going to focus on the corporations and their evil corporations and the fact that it's going to be basically like a metaphor for our times and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, that's why people like aliens, right? Because they love that corporate stuff, right? That's what made aliens popular, right? Is that, right? This little aside thing, you know, that's practically, which it's not, it's relevant. I mean, it is relevant to the plot. I'm not saying it's not the evil corporation that's running things, right? And putting them in these terrible situations. But that's not the focus, right? That's not why people really like aliens or alien or any of that stuff. Let's get real. But that's what the show's going to be about, okay? That's what the show's going to be about. So I thought maybe for next, because people are talking about this alien TV show, I thought maybe next week we should review Aliens. What do you think? Or not next week, Sunday. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I'm always down to watch Alien or Aliens or even Alien 3. I'm one of those rare people that actually likes Alien 3, especially the story behind Alien 3, about how it was actually cobbled together from basically almost bits of nothing. I would totally be down to talk about Aliens. And, you know, what's interesting is I'd heard about this too, and in my mind I kept thinking about, so are we saying that the alien xenomorphs who have less are going to go to war with the alien xenomorphs who have more, like class warfare among the alien xenomorphs? Like when I first heard this, I was just kind of like going, okay, all right.
It's going to be about the executives, Dave, because that's what everybody wants to see.
Right,
we all want to see the board of directors of whatever company that they worked for and see them twirling their mustache and you know, putting on their top hats and all that kind of stuff and then getting eaten by aliens. That's apparently what everybody wants. So.
And I will say this, you know, the duplicitous nature and the questionable choices of the Weyland-Yutani, you know, group or corporation or whatever it's called, actually in the Alien franchise is an integral part of it. And it does permeate all of the different versions of Aliens. But, you know, myself, I mean, I would just like to see, in all honesty, I would just like to see more of like what Aliens the second movie was, just more actual space marines battling the
aliens.
That's
what I want to see. And that's my point. And that's why I wanted to bring this up, because that's what I want to see is I want to see the Colonial Marines again. That's what I want to see. And I know that's probably what most Alien fans want to see. Most Alien versus Predator fans, they want to see not Aliens versus Predators. What they would love to see is Aliens versus Predators versus Marines, like the video game. I remember there was a video game where they did that years and years ago. And I always thought that concept even back then was awesome. Why they haven't made a movie of that, I will never understand. But they're going to do this, folks. This is what they're going to do. So, you know, in the entire, you know, spirit of why we do our reviews the way we do them on Sundays, I think we should talk about Aliens and talk about why that's what we want to see in an Alien TV series and not this crap.
Well, I think you've made a good point. I mean, you know, one of the things my late friend Scott Clark and I had in common is our love of the original Aliens movie. It was something that we talked about fairly frequently. We've actually bought Aliens art books and given them to each other for Christmas. Like Aliens was like a big thing. I remember when they released the director's cut, I went out to Las Vegas, my wife and I, and we were visiting with Scott and his wife, Kim, and we watched the director's cut of Aliens on the big screen and a midnight showing. And And, you know, Aliens is a big thing for me. Like, it's one of my favorite seminal films. Aliens is one of the best action-adventure sci-fi movies I think ever made, period. And I like all the other Aliens films for different reasons. But, you know, the duplicitous nature of the corporation, while an integral, you know, kind of part of the storyline, you know, that's not the whole reason I love Aliens. You know,
yeah, and that's my point. My point isn't like it's not part of the mythos. Like, I'm not trying to make that argument. Like they're just kind of coming out of left field with this. It's about the focus, right? There are all sorts of like supporting characters in a franchise. There's all sorts of different concepts in a franchise that are part of it, right? But that's not really the reason people love it, right? You know,
right.
As interesting as you know, like a concept like Gotham might be, ultimately people really want to see Batman. You know what I mean? And I like that concept. You know, that's one that I've even said that I liked. I remember reading one of the comics that was Gotham PD. I thought it was an interesting concept. But ultimately, you know what? That's not why you like Batman. You like Batman because you want to see Batman, right? You don't want to see the Gotham Police Department. You know what I mean? That's not that is problematic. You know what I mean? It always becomes problematic. They've done that in other ways, right? Where they make Batman shows that aren't about Batman. There's one on right now, right? So that's not what people want to see. You know what I mean? Not that it's not part of the mythos. Not that you can't have that stuff. But ultimately, that stuff is basically, it's not the focus. That's my point. It's not the focus. And then when it becomes the focus, I think it's problematic and it can be disastrous. Now, Lynn has a comment. Whoops, and I did the wrong one. Lynn has a comment here. He says, I was excited when I saw the Aliens versus Predators concept art of the Mayan temple battle and was so green. And Lynn, I actually, I remember that film, and I really liked that too, by the way, the Mayan temple battle stuff. That was really cool, and I wish they had done more of that. I totally agree with you, Lynn. It looked really good and they just glossed over it. And if they had made that more the centerpiece, I think the film would have been much more successful because they had some good ideas. And actually that's the opposite of what I'm talking about. Sometimes that's true. Sometimes in a film, you'll have a side idea that's actually much better than the central premise of the movie, right? And that's a great example going the other way. That does happen. And he also goes on to say, always wish I could have been able, I'm assuming, to meet Bob Burns, Aliens Halloween show in his backyard out in Burbank years. Oh, no. I always wish I could have been able to Bob Burns, Aliens Halloween show in his backyard out in Burbank years ago. He ended up with a lot of movie props for his collection, including the alien queen head. Oh, been able to see. Always wish I'd been able to see Bob Burns, Aliens Halloween show in his backyard out in Burbank years ago. And he ended up with a lot of movie props for his collection, including the alien queen head. Very cool, Len. That would have been very cool to see. I think that would have been really awesome.
Sorry about that. I was trying to see if I could find the Starlock magazine that actually has pictures in it from what Len's talking about. So for those people who may not be too familiar, I don't know if Bob Burns still does it, but Bob Burns used to put on these elaborate Halloween events at his house, obviously around Halloween time. And one of the really super elaborate ones that he did one year was an alien, and they reconstructed part of the Nostromo. And if I remember correctly, Walter Koenig was actually there and played a role. And they entertained a lot of people. And then I know for a lot of years, Bob Burns did this with different themes. I know for a couple different years, whatever, they did the aliens and it always looked really cool. They featured it actually in Starlight magazine many, many years ago, and it looked really awesome.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. I was not familiar with that. Lynn says he had guys from ILM working behind the scenes. That sounds like that would have been a lot of fun. But Lynn, I did film in Burbank not too long ago, in an actual studio in Burbank over in November. So lots of good stuff out there. That basically is Hollywood. Burbank is where a lot of the big studios and a lot of independent studios are at too. It's a really cool thing. Even where I was filming, there were studios like all over the place, and small studios, but they were all over the place out there in Burbank. So they got a lot of cool stuff out there. And Lynn does confirm that he says It's in the book. It came from Bob's basement. Yeah, Chekhov was the captain of the Nostromo. The Nostromo.
The Nostromo.
So there you go.
Yeah, I went and grabbed this off of the off of one of the shelves here in the I think this is the one that had stuff in it from Bob Burns Halloween thing that he did. Maybe I'm mistaken. This may not be the right one. Anyhow, I just remember seeing coverage for it actually in Starlog back in the day, and it looked just really kind of cool and fun and just a really neat thing that he was doing. Yeah, maybe this is not the, well, I'll try and find it. Actually, here's what I'll do. I'll try and find it for this Sunday episode, the
Rogues
retrospective. I'll try and find it for that. Then I'll have it and I'll scan it. We can put the images up and kind of show everyone what that was all about. Apologies. I had to destroy my mood lighting to try and see if I could find it because it's too dark in here with my blue lighting. Although now you can actually see like the Funko Pop figures in the back and the artwork on the walls and my new desk and all this kind of nonsense going on back here. So there you go. If anyone's terribly curious about it.
Well, everybody remember, please join us on Sunday. That'll be Sunday at noon, noon Pacific time. And we're going to be reviewing Aliens.
Yep. There you go. There you go. Should be fun. Should be fun. No longer moody. Yeah. Well, I mean, at the moment, it's not as, I should probably change. Actually.
It's from James. Dave, no longer moody.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. That looks a little better.
Right. Jane says she really liked the picture that you drew better. Of the alien sitting in a rocking chair playing a banjo.
Yeah, with a bug zapper. That was the gig. There was a bug zapper in that sketch. So, yeah, and that was actually the Deliverance alien because he had a banjo made out of human skulls and he was playing it, you know, da 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 da. Anyhow, so that was the alien Deliverance, and he had like the thing, the little piece of weed or whatever sticking out of his mouth. And there was a bug zapper in the back zapping the bugs because they refer to the aliens as bugs, you know. So this is another bug hunt, sir. Talking about aliens. So there you go.
There you go. There you go. And all James, right. It's funny you say that I have mood lighting. I don't have mood lighting. I'm actually I do my broadcast at my dinner table. It's just the light above my dinner table. I was just talking. It's funny because I was just talking to Dave about the fact that I stopped using my light. And we were actually talking about light and shadow and all that, because I do have a lot of shadow, right? And I was explaining that I stopped using my light. I just thought it was a pain in the butt because I was like, who cares? So, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I keep trying to find a way to upgrade my setup. And it seems like every time I do something new, I think it's an upgrade. We get less people watch and less people watch and less people watch. And then so today I brought my canister microphone out in the hopes that the sound would be a little bit better, because I've noticed that the sound sounds kind of hollow on my end on the podcast. So I thought, well, let me get the other microphone out and kind of see how that sounds. So we'll see if it makes any kind of an improvement. If you're listening to the podcast at a later date and you think it does, please comment or something and let me know, because I'd like to know your opinion that's on that.
Yeah, if you notice a difference right now, please tell us as well, because some of you have definitely checked this out on previous episodes. And James, you are right. I am moody thinking about Picard. That always makes me moody. Anytime I think about it. And it's so funny because I was one of those people that initially, I remember there were people saying, you know, there were people that were so angry at Picard that they were not watching Next Gen anymore. And I was kind of like, come on, man, don't be like that. You know, that's not cool. I watch Next Gen less and less and less now. Like, and I do still watch it occasionally. I mean, I do the hashtag All Star Trek, which is HNI. They do, you know, TOS all the way to Enterprise 6 nights a week. And sometimes I will watch an episode. But, man, more and more I'm like, God. Can't even stand Patrick Stewart anymore. I don't even want to see his face. You know, it's just, it's sad. It's sad.
Yeah. I can't watch Next Gen anymore. I just can't do it. It just, I just can't, I, it, it, I still watch a lot of
the I watched an episode last night, and it was the episode that was about the little girl that had the imaginary friend. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
And that, and I like that because it's really about the little girl. It's kind of one of those strange episodes that's not really about the cast, and it's carried by a little girl. So it is an interesting episode to watch just from that perspective, that basically this very young actress had to carry the entire episode, essentially, you know, along with another young actress who was actually, she was in Third Rock from the Sun. She was the, one of the girlfriends of the teenager or whatever.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
There. I can't remember her name, but the blonde alien girl who's, you know, looks like a little girl, but she's actually an alien. She was in Third Rock from the Sun much later on. Just a little trivia for you. I just thought I'd say that because I was just watching and I was thinking like, This episode's kind of cool because, like, you know, most of the main cast not really in it that much.
True.
I'm sorry, but it's just, man, Picard has really gotten in my head. You know, it really has. It's just, whew.
Yeah, you can't really get rid of it once it gets a hold of you. I can't either. I just, like I said, I've tried to watch Next Gen, and I can't do it anymore. I don't know. It's beyond it. I don't know. I mean, and, you know, like I said, I can still watch original series. I love original series. I can still watch the original movies. I mean, I can still watch almost all of it. Like I keep finding a more and more of an appreciation of Enterprise of all things. I mean, I liked Enterprise back in the day, but
I could see that.
I have a whole, like an even deeper appreciation for Enterprise now. Yeah.
And then I'll try not to hold back. I will try to tell you how I feel.
Yeah. And then Lynn also mentions too, he says here that he recently switched to a new mic and computer. Now, Lynn, I know that you're doing a show in association with the MSCA, which is also a podcast. It's called Drawing Funny, isn't it? I think it'd be interesting to mention that here on the show. I think most of the people that be listening to our show as a podcast probably would have already heard about Drawing Funny, but for some reason you haven't. The Mid-South Cartoonist Association, they do a podcast, and I think Lynn's one of the hosts, or maybe the main host, and I think it's called Drawing Funny. And definitely worth checking out. speaking of Drawing Funny, if I can reach this, I can't really show you all what I'm currently working on, but I did draw an animated Superman recently. I thought it turned out kind of nice.
Oh, I like that.
It's supposed to be done in the old Max Fleischer's cartoon style, like a really fun Golden Age Superman.
I dig that a lot.
Yeah, so there's that. I intend to color it up at some point when I have like a few minutes to myself, but my other project I'm working on has me just incredibly, incredibly busy. So it's probably going to be a little while. So
that's very cool.
There you go. All right. Do you have a few more comments in the Rogues Gallery? I don't know if you want to put those up, Eric. And then I think at that point we might be good to maybe call it a show, unless anyone has anything else they want to talk about.
Well, Lynn was saying that he had to get a new computer because the old one couldn't handle Zoom. And I can understand that because I'm sure a lot of people didn't know what Zoom was, and now they live by it, right? So
right.
That's definitely something that's happened.
Oh, and then James mentions, color it after I post it. Well, you can always reshare the colored one too, James, and you can do what I do. You get two posts out of it instead of just one. Post the inks and later you post up the colors. That's what I do.
There you go.
So yeah, there you go. All right.
Oh, okay. Lynn did say about that episode. He said he just did one, I guess, with John
Ostrander.
Ostrander. There we go. He said just had a comics conversation tonight. And said they'll post that episode on Wednesday.
So there you go. Yeah, there you go. And I think it's called Drawing Funny, if I remember correctly. And then obviously, you can search for it on wherever you are. You know, obviously, give it a listen. Give it a subscribe. In addition to that, please subscribe to our podcast if you're not listening to it. It is essentially a rebroadcast of the live video show that we're doing this evening. But I do want to encourage you to check it out. And as always, we encourage, please tell your friends and family about the show if you think they would like it. Make sure they know there's an audio show as well as a video show. It might be easier for some people to listen than necessarily watch. So there you go.
He says you got the name right. You are correct.
Okay, good, good. All right, drawing funny. So that's what you want to search for. Very cool, very cool. All right. If that's good, I think we should call it a show, unless you have anything else you want to add, Eric.
No, I'm pretty much good.
Okay, all right. So I want to thank you for hopefully watching or listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live. Again, my name is Dave Beatty. I've been one of your hosts. If you're curious to see what occupies a lot of my time, please check out my t-shirt company, which is kirbytees.com. That's www.kirbyts.com. You can check out all the fun things we have to offer there. Sarah Aerosmith, the Brains Are Magic t-shirt, as well as the Skeletor, which is a collaboration between myself and the Janimal. And also we have Retro Rogues Live t-shirts. We'd like to encourage you to please consider purchasing a Retro Rogues Live t-shirt and supporting what we're doing here on the show. Again, that's over at kirbytees.com, kirbyts.com. Very cool. All right. And I want to thank my great co-host, Mr. Eric Alexander, for coming on here and providing, as always, his unique perspective on all these fun, interesting topics as far as collectibles and obviously pop culture and all that is concerned. Eric, please tell the folks who will be watching or listening at home where they can learn more about you on the interwebs.
I'm most active on Twitter, so you can find me there at BassGod14. That's at BASSGOD14. My DMs are always open, so you can reach me that way. Also, if you make a comment, more likely than not, I'll be the one responding there. BassGod14 is also the official YouTube for the Retro Rogues Live. It's also the official Twitch. So if you make a comment there, more likely than not, again, I will be the one responding to you. And again, as Dave said, please like, share, subscribe. We are trying to do our best to expand the reach of the show. The way that the algorithms work on all these different platforms is we need comments, we need shares, we need likes, we need all that stuff, because that's what helps us to fight the evil algorithm. And Lynn says, thanks. Gotta go feed the kids. Lena is getting vocal. And Jane says she enjoyed the show. And then we had one more comment that I wanted to get from James there, where he says, to quote Poltergeist 2, they're back. And we'll leave him with the last word.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and find the live show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14. That's BASSGOD14 on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.